This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
在中华人民共和国上海, 我是李凯先生. Live from Shanghai in the People's Republic of China, I'm Kai Rizdal.
The Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning once again from the Astor House Hotel. I am standing on the steps of Shanghai's first modern stock exchange. It was right behind me in the Peacock Hall when it opened just 15 years ago. And this is going to be our base of operations all week as we take a look at the dynamic Chinese economy. Predictions are it will be the world's biggest by 2030, maybe 2035. And really, you can't walk too far in this city without finding a money-making operation of one kind or another. You see the American way of doing business all over the place. Shoe stores like Nine West and coffee shops like, yeah, that one. But there are many places in this city where things are done differently. Whole blocks of city streets devoted to one kind of product, flooring on one street, measuring devices on another. I talked to one guy who sells only things that make doors open and close, things like hinges and brackets. Don't go looking for handles and knobs here. They're on the next block up. One of those things that makes heavy doors swing closed slowly will cost me 100 kwai. That's about 12 bucks. And I figured that was a little steep. So I talked to the guy in the store next door, selling the exact same hinges.
It's 200 kwai. I can't possibly go lower than that.
That is, until I said, the guy next door is charging 100.
All right, I can go 80. Okay, 60.
Can't do that at Nine West now, can you? We do try to keep you up to date on the news here on the Morning Report. And what we're going to be doing this week is the news as seen perhaps through a Chinese lens. Here to help us do that is our Beijing Bureau Chief Jocelyn Ford. She's down here with us in Shanghai. Hey, Jocelyn.
Great to have you here, Kai.
So listen, I was thinking of Alan Greenspan this morning.
You were.
I was. Sad as that is to say. But here's the thing. We were looking through the papers a bit earlier, and I noticed this thing on real estate growth up in Beijing. The China Daily is reporting that real estate prices in Beijing up 20%. But there's another story in the paper today talking about Shanghai homeowners real unhappy with the way real estate prices are falling. What's going on here?
Hey, it's sort of like the United States. Some cities' prices go up, some cities' prices go down. But Shanghai, it's a real gas because people are lining up because they want their money back. You see, home ownership here is sort of new. It's only been around for less than a decade. So people think that their price should always go up, and people who just bought houses and now find they're worth less than when they bought them are pretty unhappy.
Yeah, I'd love to see that happen in the States. Right, so prices are falling, but, you know, I mean, in a lot of ways, it is sort of a capitalist market in real estate here anyway. And is it a surprise that prices might fall?
Well, people aren't always told about this. A local journalist told me they're not allowed to write when that prices are falling because the local government wants to keep a sort of a level on this and are afraid of a panic, and so they don't let them write freely about the real estate market.
That's interesting because the other thing that we're seeing now in the papers that maybe we didn't used to see a lot is news of environmental problems. We had that huge benzene spill up in the northeast part of the country a couple of months ago. And now just in the past few days, there's been more news of environmental problems. And it seems to be getting some sort of official approval, this kind of news.
Well, actually, the government has said that local officials now need to go public with this information and the public should be informed. And that is new. In the past week, we've seen two other spills in the newspaper, at least. We didn't used to read about this on a daily basis. Now, the question is, did these happen and we just didn't hear about it, or were there not so many? And who knows?
Who does know? Our Beijing Bureau Chief Jocelyn Ford. Thanks, Jocelyn.
Thank you.
Western businesses are looking east these days with dollar signs in their eyes. And Paul French gets a lot of calls from companies like that. He runs a Shanghai firm called Access Asia. But he's got a sideline, too. He's writing a biography of an American writer named Carl Crow, who came to Shanghai when it was a very different place.
Hello. Well, Shanghai he landed in 1911 was a far-flung outpost of the British Empire. It had no bars, very little decent housing. And before the First World War, it was a reasonably quiet, reasonably sleepy backwater. After the war in Shanghai, things changed completely. The recovery of Europe led to a massive boom in demand for exports from China. Over that period of the 1920s and early 1930s, the great mansions and villas emerged, and the Shanghai tycoons emerged, both the foreigners as well as the local Chinese who started to make a lot of money. And then it became a wealthy city with very successful business and everything that goes along with that. Think of grand buildings on the waterfront, jazz, the infamous Chicago-level rates of crime, and the new modern culture emerging in Shanghai. And Crowe was there to see it. He was part of a very early group of American entrepreneurs and business people that came to Shanghai, not like the British for reasons of empire, but came here to make money. And that's exactly what he proceeded to do. When the boom started to happen, Crowe had realized that foreign companies wanted to sell their products to China. And he got an advertising company up and running that represented mostly American, but also some big European companies. Ones that have come back to China since, he represented Colgate, he represented Buick Cars, Unilever and Pond's face cream, brands that are all still around. When he got back to America, the first thing he did was write a book called 400 Million Customers. It was an incredibly popular book at the time, and it was an excellent book. It was a very wry, very readable account of business success, but largely failure in China, and the fact that just about every foreign company in the world came in with dreams of selling to 400 million customers. When we meet with clients that are new to China, we usually quote from Crowe's book from 1937. And back in 1937, he wrote that China was a market characterized by long receivables, rigid markets, structural inefficiency, impossible logistics, relentless and brazen copying and substitution of imported goods with fakes. You know, if you don't tell them that that was written in 1937, it could have been from a Wall Street Journal editorial about the situation in China now. And we still get people coming in dreaming of the number. So we have Rupert Murdoch coming here with his media empire talking about 2 billion eyeballs. We have Unilever coming here with deodorant talking about 2 billion armpit market. It's extremely interesting when you're able to talk to a large American company who is extremely worried at the amount of money they are losing in China, to point out to them that they really needn't worry because they did this in the 1930s as well. So all the people here losing money at the moment can take some solace in the fact that perhaps their grandfathers did the same thing.
We are live from China all week. Our crew here is keeping a blog about our trip. It's on our website, marketplace.org. I'm Kai Rizdal in Shanghai. That's American Public Media, by the way.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. By Medtronic. Alleviating pain. Restoring health. Extending life. Medtronic. On the web at Medtronic.com. And by LendingTree.com, where you can choose from up to 4 customized loan offers. 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win. LendingTree.com.
There's cutting corners to save a little time, and then there's just plain cheating.
But it's almost impossible to go into a Chinese factory and find that the means of production in that factory are entirely legitimate. The software is pirated, the machines are reverse engineered, and this is part of China's low-cost miracle.
And you wonder why American companies are afraid? Piracy in the far, far east, tomorrow on the Marketplace Morning Report. Live in Shanghai, I'm Kai Rizdal. Thanks for being with us.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college accountant? How does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox, and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.